Hallo und willkommen zur 5. Folge von Open Court, dem Podcast vom FC Bayern Basketball, präsentiert von BayWa. Mein Name ist André Vogt und ich freue mich heute auf einen ganz besonderen Gast. Daniele Baiesi ist Sportdirektor des FC Bayern Basketball, ehemaliger Chief of International Scouting der Detroit Pistons aus der NBA und vor allem Italiener. Wie er den aktuellen Kader des FC Bayern Basketball zusammenstellte, was er einst von NBA-Champion Joe Dumars lernte, welche Sprichworte seine Heimatstadt Bologna so parat hat und von welchem aktuellen Spieler des FCB ihm seine ehemaligen Kollegen aus den USA abrieten. All das und viel, 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 viel mehr verrät die heutige in Englisch aufgenommene Folge in Überlänge.
Podcasts machen voll Bock, ey.
Und jetzt zu Gast bei Open Court, Daniele Baiesi vom FC Bayern Basketball. Hallo Daniele.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Und vielleicht auch kurze Info, ihr hört das Ganze jetzt auf Englisch, aber ist kein Problem. Das kriegen wir, glaube ich, alle zusammen hin. Daniele, maybe not all the fans listening know who you are, what you do. So if you should just describe your job with FC Bayern shortly, what would it be?
Well, I don't do anything, but I do it very well. So, I'm the sports director, which means that I direct everything that is related to sports in the basketball club. And it is a pretty silly way to summarize it, but the town of Livorno in Italy has a lot of sayings, and they say from the Lago al Milione, which means from the needle to Marco Polo books. So I'm basically in charge of everything that is related to the activity of the team and the teams. Everything that is related to playing, coaching, organizing the life. Of course, this is a big organization, so I can't expect to be micromanaging anybody or anything. I'm just around the team as much as possible, trying to always do things in a better way, improve the quality of the travels or the decisions that we can make that are related to any of the teams that wear our jerseys. So
if I would call you the architect of the roster, would that be a fitting description?
Well, an architect might sound offended. It might sound disrespectful towards the profession, because obviously they have they're qualified. I'm not. I don't have any qualification in that sense. I never was a coach. I played, but I think we should overlook my playing career, definitely. No, it's not a question of architecture. It's a teamwork. Anything we do is the product of a lot of talks, a lot of philosophies, and the way we expose them one another, and basically how much our individual point of views are going to enrich the point of view of the people we're talking to or sharing opinions with. And this is exactly what happens when we decide to take this player or that player to build a team.
So you would say building a team is like a team effort. It's you, it's Andrea, I guess.
I'm a carpenter, not an architect.
Well, you need qualifications to be a carpenter too.
Or maybe just experience, because you studied out after school doing that and you learned the profession on the fly. And I would consider, and I say it in a very respectful way. I come from, I had a lot of carpenters in my family. So, it's a noble profession, because without that, we can't build our house. And without them, we can't build our house. So let's say that there's somebody who is in charge of selecting the material, and somebody who's in charge of putting them together. It's a team of carpenters working together, and some of them have also a license in deciding whether this brick is better than the other one. So this is how it works for us.
There's one word you already said, philosophies. What is your basketball philosophy?
I don't have any, and I mean it. My philosophy, it's not a basketball philosophy, it's my approach to life in general. This is how I was born and raised. I have a positive take, and I think that I can always learn something from anybody. And this is, I believe in, you know, in the cliche. I believe the cliche is real. There's no I in team. And this is what I, you know, sometimes, and it might sound silly, but, you know, it happens sometimes when you watch a team play and you kind of feel goosebumps, you know, and, you know, if you feel goosebumps because you see a group of people coming together, trying to go the extra mile and to put everything they have on the court. And that's when you feel that's when you might realize that, you know, what you're doing has a purpose. You don't know the purpose of the day before it happens, but once it happens, damn it, you know, that's the one.
But that's more like a psychological thing, right? When you see people working together, coming together as a team. The one example I always think of are the San Antonio Spurs 2015, the way they played, the way they shared the ball, and you just saw that it just was much more than a team. It was just maybe just one being playing basketball, different guys. But you got to have some underlying ideas of how you want your teams, even if you're not the only guy deciding which players you take. But don't you have an underlying idea of how you want basketball to be played in a technical sense?
Well, there might be general concepts that you try to keep as a light bulb, you know, that guiding you, guideline, let's say. But then in details, you know, it depends on what kind of coach you're going to hire, because he will have his beliefs and ideas, and I might like the idea of having interchangeable players, but then you might end up hiring a coach that doesn't like switching defense. So this is to simplify, and to give you an example, a concrete example. So sometimes you have to compromise. Sometimes Yates used to say that sometimes you have to die if you wanted to leave. To live, not to leave. And sometimes this happens because you're not the almighty club that gets everything, the first choice on everything that is out there. But sometimes, you know, for example, when you choose a coach, you're looking for 10 things. And it's very rare, if not never going to happen, that a coach is going to bring all of those 10 things that you need. Most probably the good ones, the great ones, are going to bring 7 out of 10, and you have to decide if those 7 are the priorities that you and your club have. And in this sense, it's you know, I make a step towards you and you make a step towards me, and we're going to work together. I'm going to say something that's going to help you, and you're going to say and do something that is going to help us. It's a partnership in that sense. And that's what you're looking for when you look for a coach. At least this is how I see things. I like physical players. You know, I worked 5.5 years in Detroit. I had the fortune of being around Joe Dumars, so I know exactly what the bad boys are, or where still are, I would say, because it's a legacy for the franchise. And I really cherish everything that I went through in those 5 years, and everything that I had the blessing to learn. You know, taking our coach now, for example, we have a person that was coaching, let's say, the Showtime guys in back in Bamberg, and like Pat Riley did. But then when Pat Riley had the chance to build a different team in a different city like New York, he went for the blue collar guys, tough guys, who got nothing to do with Showtime. I think that our coach now, Andrea Trinchieri, is pretty much walking the same walk, I would say.
Okay.
And this is very interesting, because you see how people can adjust to the change of scenario, or you know, can, you know, adjust their own beliefs to the circumstances. I'm not saying you have to trade principles for circumstances, because otherwise they're not principles, but the principle is nobody can shy away from playing his best defense. Then whether you do down defense or switching defense, you know, it can be, it's open for discussion, let's say.
How many of these 10 checkpoints did Andrea check when you talked to him and Herbert Hainer before the season?
Well, I can't speak for the president, of course. I can speak for myself. And honestly, it was very easy in the sense that, you know, I've known Andrea for a long time now. And I've seen his professional growth because I've seen him coaching juniors in Milano. And I've seen him coaching in second division in Italy and then coaching in Cantù. And we kind of, you know, we kind of clicked because I was asking questions. He was giving answers. Then he was asking questions. I was giving answers. And we started to help each other out in that sense on a very friendly basis. And we started to share experiences, ideas, opinions, even stuff that, why don't you try to do this? I don't know what the outcome is going to be, but this is something that goes through my mind now, and it might be interesting for you. Who knows? Some of them, you know, he tried. Some of them I tried. Some of them, yeah, I tried, but it's not going to work. So it was easy in this past summer. I know what you want. I know what when he says a word, I know what that means, you know, and this made things a lot easier. In understanding each other, not in putting the team together, because then you have to deal with other stuff that you can't control. But in understanding each other, that was a piece of cake.
When you guys selected the players prior to the season, I mean, you already said you never get all the players you want. They're not the perfect players for the system you might envision. How important is it for you two guys to compromise and come to an opinion about a player?
Well, this is a daily discussion. It's funny because, you know, there's a saying in my hometown that says, you know, in my hometown, there's always people who drink or open a bottle of champagne and somebody else who says that it has a cork. He's the one saying that it has a cork and I'm the one opening the bottle all the time. This just to, it's figure of speech, of course. And, you know, the coaches are obviously, no exception. They're always focused on today. That's the nature of their profession. They need to keep it real on what's going to happen today, tomorrow at best. It's very rare that a coach can have the same vision that the club is going to have. The question is, if the coach is understanding the club's vision and can be a part of it by taking care of the today's issues in a perspective, with a perspective approach. Make an example. We have a guy like Nick Weiler-Beb who has huge potential, and we all know that. Now, he might go one step ahead and two backwards every week, but we believe he's going to get better. We do not know if he's going to hit his upside, because it's a question of maturity and of the kind of person that he is that we are slowly discovering. Because in the end, it's not a job interview that is going to define what kind of person you're going to be dealing with. You might have an idea, something might glimpse, but it's very rare that he goes, you know, beyond that. He has to accept the flaws of today as an indication on what he has to work on. And our job is to keep things in perspective and use his knowledge, use, air quote, his knowledge and his quality in order to get the best out of the kid. With Andrea, many times it worked out. Sometimes it did not. I would be lying if I said everything worked out. It didn't. Even in our past time together, some of the things we did not work out. But I would say that overall, we definitely got the best out of the material, let's say, or human resources, as it is in fashion to say right now that we decided to go for. So, but you know, one thing that is never missing between myself, the club, and the coach, the current coach, is confrontation. Sometimes even hard confrontation, but it's always intended to get the best out of the situation we have.
It was about the same. Confrontation is something that brings you forward, right? I mean, it can help you grow.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a misconception about the confrontation. That doesn't mean that you have to fight somebody every day, because it's like, okay, I'm not married, but marriage, I assume, is a lot of compromising and accepting. Yeah, you guys can
pretty
speak
much,
now,
yeah.
about it. But I take the same. I take this example from the other standpoint, from the opposite standpoint. I decided not to go for it as long as I'm in this kind of professional moment, let's say my air quote career, because you know what your limitations are. I can't be dealing with this. And I know I'm not good at dealing with this, so I can't do stuff like that. You know, I can't take away energy or desire to confront with somebody at home, because this is what I do on a day-to-day basis on the job. And this, you know, kind of completes me. You got to have the same approach, in my opinion, in this profession. This is not a normal profession. It's not a profession where you clock in and clock out, for example. You know you're clocking in. You don't know what time you're going to be clocking out. And if this is your approach, oof, I don't think you're going to be lasting long.
But did I understand you right? You're not going to get married as long as you do this job, because you can't have confrontation at home and at work?
No, I didn't say that. No, I said, I meant to say it was a conscious sacrifice that I did years ago, decades ago. I've been doing this for 20 years now. And you can't expect to have the same amount of energy you had 20 years ago. You might still, you're still dedicated, you're still passionate, but you know, you're winding down. That's just normal. So it's just that back then, in order to do everything that I thought was necessary to do, I didn't want anybody to go through my... It's an awful word because of the meaning that it very often has in conversations and speeches, but because of my ambition, let's put it this way. My ambition was to go through experiences. And for how I see things, the moment you see how your decisions are impacting the life of somebody who could be your son now, you know, all of the players are 20 years younger than I am. This is a big thing, because and it is, I would say, a noble type of lifetime goal for a person like me. At least this is how I like to see things.
You already touched on your career a little bit, and I think it's extraordinary, because we started as a journalist, and that's pretty rare for journalists to get into the profession of being, you know, in sports professionally, right?
I don't know about that. I know it happened to me, and you know, what John Lennon used to say, that life is what happens to you while you're busy doing other plans. And this is exactly what happened to me. It was a series of circumstances that just occurred, and I was able to adjust to everything that happened and turn it to in my favor. And I had to, you know, in 36 hours, pack my stuff, leave my hometown, and go, you know, and move in the middle of nowhere in the city of Biella, 45,000 people, coming from a city that is 10 times bigger, which has two teams competing for the EuroLeague title. So you're coming from the Mecca of basketball to a place that nobody knows. And you ended up staying there 6 years. How great is that? You know, it means that the people you found there, you know, they fill the void that you might have felt when you left home. And I still am enchanted for everything that life is dealing to me, you know. And I'm just waking up every day and trying to get into my world. And it wasn't easy, but it just happened. So I just took it. What can I tell you?
I mean, on one side, as a journalist, I guess you were critical of the teams, players, coaches, managers, sport directors you recovered. And then you just kind of switched sides. Was it tough? I mean, just being on the other side and then being criticized?
No. Well, I don't want to sound disrespectful, but, one time I was like, yeah, but they wrote, yeah, but they said, you know, I get that, you know, but to me, it really makes no difference. And I don't say that I don't mean bad, but if I want to know the opinion of a journalist, I'm going to call him and ask him what he thinks. I'm not going to read the papers because I've been on the other side and I know what might happen in the mind or in the pen of somebody who's writing something down. And but with all the respect I have for the profession, which has been mine for 5 or 6 years, whatever is said or written has no bearing what I do. I care about what happened inside the organization, not outside. And I respect the communication part, and sometimes, you know, people, who do you think you are? I'm just nobody. But it's got no bearing what people say. If you get caught in what people are saying, you get screwed because you start diverting your energy onto something that is really not important. I mean, you're taking the time. Now, okay, I'm talking here and it's a pleasure for me. But I'm never going to take the time, steal the time to one of my players or to one of my coaches or to one of my colleagues for a talk, for a coffee, for something, to have an interview. Mm-hmm. I understand it is a very seducting game, the media, the exposure, this and that. And a lot of people got lost. And I've seen them getting lost, reading blogs, the forums, the fans. What are the fans saying? I respect the fans that, you know, we do this because of them, you know, we are selling emotions. And, when you see our team play this year, I believe that the fans are, you know, even if they can't come to the game, you know, I still believe that they get vibes out of our games that are like, wow, this is great. This is, you know, trying to do things in a better way, in a harder way, and with a lot more, how do you say, the Italian is, Italian word is trasporto, which means how much these emotions are driving you, carrying you, or moving you from here to there. This is the way to appreciate and to care about what they think and about what they say. Not reading the anonymous comment on a forum or an article on a newspaper, with all the respect. For me, it was different because, you know, I had to deal with a lot of non-sports reporting. It was related to sports, but two teams in my hometown, after winning the EuroLeague title in 2001, or participating in the Final Four in 2004, 2005, and they went bankrupt. So I had to report about that. And that's when you realize, you know, that the children's game is over. And you all of a sudden realize you're in adult worlds and you have to deal with that. And this was the tough part. The tough part was something that I carry inside and never related to something that was printed or said, and it's got no bearing what I do.
And I think it's always like fans think they can look inside, but I mean, we know that it's just a different world, and it's just a little tip is sticking out for the fans to see, right?
Well, the fans need to know and need to take under consideration what they need to take under consideration. They're fans. You can't expect the fans to do the stuff that you're supposed to do as a manager or a coach is supposed to do as a coach. They have the rights to criticize the show. I mean, you go to a movie theater, and if you don't like the movie, you still pay the ticket and you get out of the movie theater and say, I didn't like the movie. You know, I'm a big movies and a big music guy. And you don't like the show, you don't go back. You don't buy the LP and so on and so on. For how I see things, I've been a fan also in my hometown. And I understand their point of view and I respect that. But it can't be mine. And I hope that the fans also understand that. And I have to say that the sports culture here is in Germany is fantastic in that sense, because people do respect. They might disagree with what you say, but they also say most of the time, well, but you guys are inside. We can see only the surface of things. So they always take this under consideration. Maybe you feel there's a lack of passion a little bit from time to time. Maybe. We're Mediterranean people. We have a temperament, and you guys are, you know, I envy you guys. I mean, you're always under control.
Well,
most of the times you're under control, and most of the times we're not. But there's a flip side, you know. Sometimes the being out of control goes over the line, and you go back from a road game, and you have the fans waiting for you to beat the crap out of you because you played bad. So, you know, this is a great place to work in the right way and to do things the way things should be done, even the relationship with the fans and even the relationship with the media. So I respect, I've been in their shoes and I know how bad you feel when your team loses or when your team, you know, does not represent you. I kind of think that this year, you know, we all feel proud by saying, you know, we're members of this team, we're fans of this team, regardless of what's going to happen from now till June. I think, you know, the result depends on the ball bouncing in, bouncing out. But I think that we definitely learned our lessons, at least up to a certain extent. And we understood probably, we reminded ourselves better why we're doing this and what's behind the profession that we all do. It's not the salary, it's not the glory in the sense that the fame or the being recognized, you know, people pulling you over and you're the blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but it's the closeness and the distance with one another, and I mean people in the organization that lead our actions.
So this year, I mean, it's gone great. Obviously, you're at the top of the league at the BBL level.
So far.
Yeah, well, so far, obviously. EuroLeague is going great. Is there one thing you can point to why it's different than it was last year? Because last year, obviously, in EuroLeague, it didn't go so well.
If you watch the movie Finding Forrester, this is not a soup question. I stole his line, Sean Connery's line. Yeah, a lot of things. I think we, and me in the first place, of course, being the one who directs sports, I made a lot of conservative decisions, and I think I compromised way too much in the things that needed to be done. And sometimes, you know, in the back of your mind, you're always like, yeah, we got this, you know, we're right. And guess what? You take a risk that ends up not being a calculated risk, and this is going to hit you hard, and you're going to be paying for it. And this is exactly what happened. There's a lot of things. There were a lot of things that were unsaid, unspoken, not clear. Communication is a big thing. And I think we had critical lack of communication last year. And I'm talking about internal communication, mm-hmm. not the media communication.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And as a result, I think we ended up not understanding each other on the things that needed to be done. And we did not know where we wanted to go and how we wanted to go there. there's not one recipe to win or to make things good. You can choose to go to Rome, we say in Italy, through Florence, through L'Aquila, Pescara, whatever. But not all the roads are the same. If you go off-road and you go with a, you know, a sports car, you might end up destroying the sports car. So you need to know where you want to go, and you need to choose the right mean to go there. This is exactly what didn't happen last year. This year, I think it was clear since the beginning. Plus, I would say after a bad season like we had, it's not only a bad season results-wise. It was bad for us to live it, mm-hmm. you know, to experience it. It was frustrating. It was, God, you know, let's hope it ends as soon as possible, you know. Mm-hmm. Plus everything that happened, you know, in pandemics-wise. Yeah. And there was another hard hit for all of us. Because all of a sudden you start like, okay, what's going to happen? What's happening at home? You know, it was very difficult to be focused on basketball. We already had our own, yeah, but, you know, fingers to point. And then all of a sudden there's something that takes your attention away. So that was the icing on the cake, if I can say that. This year it's just like, okay, we want to prove the world that, you know, we still know what to do, how to do it. There's a song written by a famous Italian songwriter that said, I'm not finished. You'll see, I'm not finished. Well, people thought that we were finished. Yeah, maybe we are, but we won't let others say that. That has to come from us. We have to prove that we are finished. And knowing what I know now, we're nowhere close. Mm. To our end.
I think one thing, the outside world, the fans sometimes don't understand, I think it was very much open to see in the bubble at the Audi Dome, was in these extreme circumstances, teams who don't stand together, who are not, you know, having each other's backs, they're going to crumble. And I think that's what you alluded to, right? What happened to Bayern last year?
Well, that's obviously the impression that people got from us, from, you know, looking at us from outside. Some of the players even stated something mm-hmm. in that direction. So it wasn't a secret, and it was, some of the things were there to be seen. And we felt, probably all of us, that we couldn't help ourselves. And instead of taking a look at who needs our help, we're just like, yeah, I'm helpless. So this is a very, and I don't want to criticize my homeland, but I come from a great land, the greatest of all lands, but which is also not so good of a country. And people make the difference in that sense. You know, I feel good, so everybody's okay. That's a very, very deep in our roots type of barbarian mentality, middle age mentality. And, you know, this is what probably we all did last year. It was clear, honestly, the vibes that we got from our team during the bubble. Because before, you know, before the pandemics, it was still different. There was something left in the tank. And I still believe, this is my belief, okay, no disrespect to anybody who had the season much better than ours. And I'm not meaning only Alba. Even other teams had a fantastic season. Ludwigsburg, even Ulm had a better season than ours. But I think that without the pandemics, in a normal schedule, with all of our players, I still believe we would have been the team to beat. This is my opinion. I don't expect anybody to agree with me, but it is what it is. And this is my opinion. I'm not going to change my mind about that. If it didn't happen, it means we were not that solid from a personality standpoint. And as the pandemic's blow occurred, we just failed as individuals instead of sticking together as a team.
Was there any learning you took from that? Not just for this season, but for future seasons?
Yeah, definitely. I would be stupid to say no. but don't ask me what, because I'm not gonna share with you. There's always something to learn. It's difficult to explain what exactly, mm-hmm. because a lot of my job is what I had the fortune of working with and for Joe Dumars for 5.5 years, and he told me once, you know, when you see a game, when you watch a game, there's the game. What they do on defense, what they do on offense, and the flow of the game, the score of the game is the plot. Then there are a lot of subplots. The subplots are this reaction, that body language, that sentence said, that reaction of the coach, that reaction of the referee. I, for example, believed that the lack of discipline in the dressing code in the locker room, for example, was not an issue. Well, I learned it the hard way. It is not the issue, but it is the issue, the deeper issue manifesting itself. Mm-hmm. This is something that I learned, that I very much overlooked. So, look, if I knew it all, I wouldn't be here, because it means, okay, well, what else can I learn over here? You know, what else can I do? Why would I stay in a foreign country, not speaking my language, not tasting my food, and so on and so on, for the sake of what? This is not going to make me a better person if I don't have anything to learn. You know, John Wooden, you know, the UCLA great, used to say, oh, how will you do it over once you learn it all? Hmm. You know, this is the challenge. And it's like, you know, bands changing their sound once they hit their ceiling. Well, what are we going to do now? I mean, is that all? What are we going to do now? And this is the approach I have now. Okay, we made it there, but we can't feel content because others are catching up.
Was it one of the reasons why you went to the United States and worked for the Pistons, that you just wanted to learn their way of doing things?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know, I had, this is a funny story. So while I was working for the Detroit Pistons, I got a call from an Italian guy who was media director of a team. Okay, he had worked here and there, lost track of him. I don't know where he is. Good guy, funny guy. So no disrespect. But this guy called me and said, like, yeah, you know what? I would like to be an NBA scout. I'm like, well, you chose a tough profession. There's only 30 jobs in the world, and there's a huge competition. Yeah, but I said to myself, if you made it, then I can make it.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, definitely. This is how I see things myself. But I was the general manager of an Italian club who made it to the semifinals in the Italian league with the lowest budget. And from out of that club, two players made it to the NBA, and had one guy is still in the NBA. Tabo Sefolosha is still there, and Jonas Jerebko just came back last year. He's in Khimki, and he has a millionaire contract, and played in the NBA for 10 years. So you have to learn your way, you know, but still, I dropped my last year of contract. It was a good contract, because I said to myself, like, this is as far as I can go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not the type of guy who likes and sits on, you know, I'm comfortable here, I'll stay. The moment I feel comfortable is the moment I screw it up. And there's so much of world for me to be seen and to be experienced, that meeting people, maybe I walk out of here today and I get married, who knows? But still, it would be something that is, you know, not planned. And I still have the fortune of being surprised by things, that the good things that happen. And I still have the conscience to get pissed when I see an injustice. You know, when I see unjust things out there. And as long as I am moved by both of these things, I will always leave the bellows of the situation to go originally to be an intern with the Detroit Pistons, not to be their international scout. It was different. My playing was different. So, and people do not know that, and they don't believe it.
Well, yeah, I was just about to say, how did that happen? Coming, going for an internship to the international scout.
Well, I'm not afraid of going the distance to do what needs to be done. I'm not afraid. I mean, in the end, going back to the first thing we were talking about, you know, if I had a wife and kids to feed, this is something that I could not have done. You know, I was supposed to join the Pistons at the age of 34 as an intern, so not getting paid and live on the other side of the world and leave everything behind back home. So how can you leave your family to do something for a year or whatever, whatever time frame, not getting paid? How can you do that? You need to marry a millionaire. That's not the case. And that's what I meant by it was a conscious sacrifice back then. Now, of course, not only I would probably not do it right now, but I would be considered overqualified and they would not take me. Hmm. So I would access probably the same world if that happened, in case it happens, or if it will happen, who knows, from a different door. But still, I would like to go the distance, which might mean I have to go work in South America, who knows, or just put all my fish on the table and at stake again and play another hand. Hmm. As long as I can have this kind of approach, I think I will always have something to learn and hopefully something to give to whatever organization I work for.
So do you mean like when you were presented with a chance to work for the Pistons that you just kind of locked yourself into the video cellar and just scouted people and just wrote order reports and worked all day?
Well, I sleep with my phone on. Okay. And this is it's a habit I took when I was in Biella. So, okay. Now don't call me at night. Okay. But those 2 hours, I actually turned off the phone because I was at a rock concert in Torino. Okay. So I turn off the phone, and as I exit the stadium, I switch on my phone again and I see a 248 call. 248 is the area code of Detroit, Michigan. Auburn Hills.
Auburn Hills.
That's where the Pistons facility was before they moved back to downtown. So I called the number back, and it was the director of player personnel telling me that they wanted to hire me. Now, I was at the concert by myself, and I started to scream and jump in one of the main boulevards of Torino, and it was full of families with kids. And you could see the parents, you know, pulling their kids on the side away from me because they thought I was some kind of alcoholic or junkie or however you want to say it. Because to me, it was unbelievable. It was really wow. That was the real Mecca. The NBA was the Mecca of the game for me. And having the chance to work and to be paid, actually, to do what I always wanted to do. At the same time, you know, I learned a lot of things in 5.5 years, and this was my approach. A lot of people know, you know, Joe Dumars told me, like, you're a director of international scouting. I was just directing myself because it was only me covering the whole world. You're not going to have interviews because you get us the next Michael Jordan, I'm going to take the credit, but you get us the next draft bust, you're not going to take the blame. I'm going to take the blame. This is what he told me. That's when you feel you're working for leaders and not bosses. There's a huge difference.
And obviously you came after they had like a pretty big disaster drafting internationally with Darko Milicic. Was it something?
It was 5 years later.
Yeah.
Or 6 years later.
Yeah. That's what I meant. So were they still talking about that? Was it some kind of a cautionary tale?
Well, Milicic was drafted the year they won the title.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, at first as a fan, you would say like, yeah, but they won the title the year they drafted him. I said the same thing. Then working for the organization, you realize how the wrong decision is going to impact the long-term future of the franchise. Now, you imagine in that draft, they passed on Carmelo Anthony, they passed on Chris Bosh, they passed on Dwayne Wade.
Yeah.
And now, you know, you understand what kind of, you know, how important making the right decision. You can always make a mistake, but you have to be able to make a mistake by having done your homework. And this was, you know, for example, I overlooked Nikola Jokic.
Mm.
I overlooked Jusuf Nurkic. But the information I had, you know, made me think like, these are not the right guys for us because of many reasons. Nobody's going to tell you or guarantee you, okay, these guys would have worked in Detroit. Nobody can say that. They would have been trade chips, maybe, which is still better than nothing. But these are some things that you learn on the fly. You can't know how the draft works before you're actually in the war room the night of the draft. Because you're alone the whole year, for example, you know, watching games, writing reports, do conference calls, this and that. But you're always by yourself. And nobody has to know that you're in the building scouting the game. And then what happens? And, you know, by the time you smoke a cigarette, the draft is over. So a year of work comes down to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow. And I was fascinated because I'm like, I need more of this. I need more of this. Till I found out that, okay, I learned a lot. Now it's time for me to practice what I learned. And this is what happened when I decided to take the job here in Germany in the first place.
Do you like the draft or do you like what's happening in Europe or in the FIBA world better? That you just can basically pick whoever you want. You just have to kind of convince them to come to your program versus, oh, now it's the draft and you can pick one guy who's in there.
Well, we do not have the draft system because we do not have the school system.
Yeah.
So that cannot happen. We live in eternal free agency here,
yeah.
Minus the rules. And I like the system in the United States because it is a system that feeds itself, survives, and it is a healthy system. Up to a certain extent, it is a healthy system. I think that down the line, the EuroLeague has to get to a similar kind of system aside from the draft. That's a different story. But for example, I sign a player, I need to be able to trade him because okay. My leverage with the player is you underperform, I have to pay you. Yes, I have to pay you, but you're going to go play where I tell you to go play. Not because of a punishment, but I need to protect my club. This is why I have a job. This is what my job is all about. Do what's good for the club. And this guy may not work with us, but he may work great somewhere else. And in the NBA, it works like that. You know, I always thought, how can an agent behave in two opposite ways with an NBA client and with a European client or the same NBA client who comes play in Europe? So, you know, at least we see only one side of the, you know, of the medal. They see both and you have to switch from one another, from one to the other as an agent. I believe that at some point we will have to get there. Otherwise, the EuroLeague is not going to ever be fairly competitive in that sense. The taxation that we have in Germany or that they have in Italy is different from the one they have in Israel, Turkey, or Russia. And these are things that need to be fixed at some point. And once it gets fixed, then it will even become possible that I trade the player for this player this year and that player the other year or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, that would actually just kind of expand your job, right?
It would totally be great.
Different strategic possibilities.
So TJ trade. You know, some of my friends just texted me and asked me, did you even get cash considerations or a second round pick in the 2025 draft? You know, but it was exciting. And you can even do healthy business in that sense. Hmm. It was a win-win situation, you know, because of many reasons. They were looking for that kind of player. They wanted him. We were looking for a different type of player, including all the financial considerations that you can keep into account. And yeah, it was just felt like Jerry West for a night.
So when you look at the EuroLeague and your team this year, it's night and day to difference to last year. What are the reasons that, like, on court that this team is much more clicking and just playing just different kind of basketball? Is it only Andrea Trinchieri or is it something else?
Andrea Trinchieri is part of the ingredients and is one of the most important parts probably, but is one of the ingredients. I think you have to, when you prepare the mayo, you know, and you whip it, sometimes it works and sometimes we say in Italian, impazzisce, gets crazy, remains liquid. So even if you did everything the right way, or you think you did everything the right way, I think the atmosphere is a lot different because we have now a lot of guys that are here to prove themselves, that they belong. I think that the type of internal communication that we have on a day-to-day basis, on the court, off the court, in the office, and that goes without saying, you know, if you hire people who are concealing instead of revealing, you know, it makes a huge difference. And I believe that doing sports is a form of art. You are expressing yourself. And that's why I'm saying it's not a job where you clock in and clock out. Yeah. When you get to the clocking in and out type of approach, you're done. You're done. You're never going to go the extra mile. And you're never going to say a word to a player that struggles because in the end, yeah, it's not my job. It should be somebody else. Talking on a personal note. And the players do the same. I take an extra shot when I'm supposed to be making a pass. I call a switch late or I don't call it and I blame my teammate because this situation was supposed to switch. Yeah, it was supposed to switch. I forgot. Why didn't you call it? You know, I remember there was a famous, famous volleyball coach, Julio Velasco from Argentina, who has been one of the most successful sportsmen that ever worked in Italy, coached the Italian national team, the phenomenal generation of Zorzi, Cantagalli, Lucchetta that won everything except the Olympics in the 90s. And you can go on YouTube and listen to his lectures very often. It's incredible how these winners and brilliant minds keep it the most simple. Mm. But he said, when I came to Italy, I blamed the alibi culture. The alibi culture is, I don't know the names of positions, you know, but the striker is not going to talk about the pass. And the pass is not going to talk about the bagger when they receive in defense, you know. I do not want somebody who talks about the pass. It's like saying, I don't want a shooter who's going to complain for a bad pass. I want a shooter who solves the bad pass. Take the pass too low when it's too low, it happens. But you got to be able anyway to shoot the ball and make it. That's the difference between being a good shooter and an elite shooter. That's what we want, elite shooters. And you need to be open-minded enough in order to have this kind of approach to work. Good is the enemy of great. You're already good, so you settle. But we want you to be great. Taking a good shot on this team, going back to philosophy, it's okay. Why not going for a great shot? And that's one of the mantras of our coach.
The question is coming now. It's a bad one. I'm still going to ask it. Well, after Bayern Basketball is good now, can this team be great in this EuroLeague season? And what would define great for you, for this team?
I think it's a complicated question. The team the team is overachieving. And one thing is, okay, tell me, what's the measurement unit of greatness?
Me, I should tell you.
No. I'm asking, I mean, what's the measurement unit that is understood in the question? How do you measure greatness? How do I measure greatness personally is to see the how a group of people becomes a team on a day-to-day basis. So how, for example, when I took Wade Baldwin, this is no secret, we say in Italian, his reputation precedes him, you know. He is universally considered a jerk, to say it in a polite way. Okay, so when I signed him, I got a call, I got a few calls, but especially one from an NBA guy that I respect a lot. And he goes like, are you out of your mind? Did you do your research on this kid?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, I did. And I know he is a borderline personality, but he's a good kid who did bad things. That's why, going back to what we were talking about early on, I don't get caught in what people say. I might make a mistake taking a risk, but I know the kid is a good kid. And I did my research, and I know that there has been people interacting with this kid. So when you get to see a universally considered jerk being a good teammate, joking around with players, yes, he's mean. Yes, he's mean on the court. He's mean in the locker room. Yes, he's borderline. But he's expressing himself and the person that he is. How the others are going to accept his extremes every now and then, and how we are going to moderate his excesses, good and bad, is defining what kind of person is going to go back on the market next year. And it's not like we got in Biella. Yeah, yeah, but he comes out of Biella. In Biella, they took every kind of head case and they cover stuff up. We never covered stuff up. Everything that was happening was public. Everybody knew everything. But we had tolerance for each other's fallibilities. And we tried to know and understand each other in order to be able to respect and understand each other. And this is what's happening now. So can this team be great? Well, they can even get along better. Yes. So the answer is yes. In terms of result, I can't say. I wish, I hope we can always get better. We work in that sense. But how close they will be coming and how tough they will fight back through adversity, through adversities, is going to determine how great we're going to be as a human beings in the first place. I might sound too philosophical, but I don't think there's any development in a group of people in 2020 if there is no individual improvement. And individual improvement is not only how good you're going to shoot from 40 to 43, is how willing to be coached you're going to be. How are you going to let the coach coach you? You know, I remember Messina said in 2001, no, sorry, in 1998, Danilovic, Savic, Rigodo, a lot of guys who had won already somewhere else. And he said like, yeah, we won again with this team because they let me coach them. How long they're going to accept this crazy Italian guy going nuts on the sideline and how open they will be to do that is going to determine how great we are going to be. It's one of the things that is going to determine how great we're going to be.
So listening to all this, do I summarize it the right way when I say it's more about the process than about the results? Because if the process is the right one, the results will come.
I believe that most of the times the results are consequences of the process. I believe when people ask like, what's your goal for the season? The goal I can't say, and I had fights with our media director all the time about this, because why do you want me to say the goal is winning? Winning is an ambition. It's not a goal. goal is to do things the right way and build ourselves an opportunity to win. It's a different thing, but it's profoundly different. Because I need to win, I need to win, I need to win, which means you need to trade three guys every time you lose a game. Well, okay, I know Nick Weiler-Babb has a potential, and I know that his development, otherwise we wouldn't have signed him for 2 years. A guy that is not proven, but we believe his development is going to happen over the course of 24 months. We believe that. Maybe we're wrong, but let time speak about that. You know, time is a gentleman, my grandfather used to say. And of course, it can only be about the process. This is why I never believed in NBA franchises or run by coaches. You know, the emotions of coaches are sky high when they win and deep down low when they lose. It's a roller coasting type of thing. I had the fortune of working for Stan Van Gundy for quite a few months before joining the German team of Bamberg. And I've seen a lot of, we lose tonight, we got to trade this guy, we got to trade the other guy. Can't work like that. You'll never find stability. And if now it's trust the process mantra, there's a lot more to just the surface of the slogan, you know.
Well, I learned a lot today, but I can't let you go before we go to the quick fire round for our sponsor, Baiva. And now I have to simultaneously translate these questions. What's the main reason for the better team chemistry this year? I think we already touched on that a lot, but maybe
you will really want me to repeat this.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. We already did that. All right. Next one is, you know, you and Andrea Tinchieri, apart from being Italian and having worked together already and being in basketball, what else kind of connects you guys?
Well, we had, first of all, we won, let's say, big enough, not big, but big enough. Together for the first time. The other thing, he's from Milan and I'm from Bologna, and you know, we have totally different backgrounds, completely different backgrounds. We just affinità elettive, you know, it's affinity, some kind of affinity, okay. And we understand each other, I think. This is something that goes beyond friendship or love or however you want to phrase it. Affinity, yeah.
I think in the US they say, you get me. I think it's a new saying.
Okay, well.
All right, the next one is, how are the Audi Dome and the FC Bayern basketball connected? Is there any connection you can point
between
to?
Between the place and the people?
The place and the... Yeah, at all the club. Oof.
I would say that it always, people talk about ambiente, which means surroundings or environment up to a certain extent. The ambiente are the people. I don't care where you put us. If you've seen in which places I worked when I worked for the Italian club, it's the people who make the place special, not the other way around. And there are cathedrals built in the desert, like we love to say in Italy, because the place has no soul, no spirit. I think in this sense, our back office people have been extraordinary this year. And despite all the difficulties that they have to go through, they have no choice. We do have a choice. They have no choice. People who struggle because of the pandemic situation, they have no choice, you know. But they've shown special closeness to the team that never happened. And going back to the question about the chemistry, when you feel you belong to something and you feel you're representing somebody and you feel the responsibility and the honor but the huge responsibility of representing something, not just a brand, but something that is beyond the brand. And beyond the brand, it's the people that is behind every door in the Audi Dome. So it's a great thing. And I have to say one thing we did this year, it might sound insignificant, but it really matters to me, is to move the coaches from the old coach's office to down in the trenches where we all are. And they feel they belong to something and somebody, that they are there to represent, to respect, to show something that is just not the brand. And they walk into the office and they see people working every day. It is a big freaking thing, believe me.
Last question. What does a good bottle of wine have in common with a basketball team?
Like Humphrey Bogart used to say, that in the bottle of wine, in his drinks, he tries to drown his sorrows. So you drink wine to celebrate, you drink wine to forget. If you store the bottle the right way, if you take care of your bottle the right way, even a not supposed to be aging bottle is going to age well. The great thing about a bottle of wine is that you have to open it and enjoy it when it is at its peak. And you need to know when the peak is. And, you know, how do you know that? By opening bottles multiple times and understanding that they're either too young or too old. This is, you wonder, you guess, you try. You know, it's a Waterboy song that said that there's very few people who just know. And I don't trust them. So I always wonder, guess, and try.
Well, that's been great. I mean, I can't remember any podcast. I had so little to say, but I'm just glad I didn't really ruin it. Thank you for your time.
How many did you do with Italian people?
Oh, let me think. Not a lot, obviously.
We're special in packing up stuff and selling it to the people, you know. We're good at that.
And this is what a podcast is at the end of the day. So a lot of thanks for your time, Daniele.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure and an honor.
Maybe do that again sometime.
Okay, don't get wise now. Okay?
No, maybe with a bottle of wine or something. You know, just get anytime, you loosened up anytime. And talk a little bit.
Anytime. All
right. Thank you. Wow, was für ein Ritt war dieser Podcast, bitte. Ich hoffe, es geht euch so ein bisschen wie mir. Ich hätte Daniele noch eine weitere Stunde zuhören und mit ihm über Basketball philosophieren können, auch wenn ich vielleicht nicht jedes Sprichwort aus Bologna so komplett verstanden habe. Wenn ihr auch Spaß hattet an der 5. Folge von Open Court, es gab ja bereits 4 andere, und die findet ihr, wie alle zukünftigen Episoden auch, bei Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Deezer, eigentlich überall, wo es Podcasts gibt. Abonniert uns, lasst eine Bewertung da und schickt uns Anregungen an opencourt@fcbayern.com. Vielen Dank an die BayWa für die Unterstützung und bis zum nächsten Mal. Euer André.